You're listening to a Mudwit Media production. Mudwit Media. I've heard its soft melody and am lost forever.
Hey everybody, and welcome to episode 5 of Jabberwocking. My name as always is Dante, and with me is Zach. Hi, Zach.
I'm not saying anything, because as we established in the last episode, you put sedative into the bag that I'm hooked up to. So you're gonna have to wake me up.
Oh yeah.
Before I'm leaving all of this in.
Well, I thought my Zach was enough. Zach. Here. Maybe I'll wake you up with a brief story about my work, because I went into work last night, and I was driving, and then literally 3 miles before my retail store that I work at, it was blacked out. Like, even the streetlights and everything were out. And it's I'm driving in at 10:30, so it's already dark outside, and then all the lights are just gone. I'm like, what the crap has happened? And then I'm driving up to my store, and I'm like, oh cool, if it's out too, it means I can go home. And I'm driving up, and I'm like, everything's out. And then the first thing that has power is my damn store. And what's weird too is it's just our block. And then the next block after that, if you were to keep driving, also had no power for a few miles. So literally only my store was on. It was the worst.
You were providing comfort to the community that desperately needed it, Dante.
That everybody came in and bought candles, essentially, and nice. Fans.
Nice.
Because it was really friggin' hot. Anyway, yeah, so that's my story.
I'm up now. It's a beautiful day in October of 2019. It's really nice. Nothing can go wrong.
We went back in time.
Yeah, I know.
Last time it was
I'm aware. Time is inflexed on day. We don't know. Next time will be in 2018, okay? It's going to be fine.
Okay.
But we can only record.
Can't wait to go back to the worst year we had, 2016.
Oh, no, we're skipping that altogether. Wait till next year we're going to 1916. I can't wait to talk. I can't wait to talk about rationing and war bonds. I'm very excited. So,
support your military. We'll have to podcast radio casters back then. We'll just do a whole episode where we're just
radio casters. We could make fake commercials about ionized yeast, which they did all the time back then. And
yes,
So,
if we go back far enough, we can freak everybody out about the War of the Planets or whatever, War of the Worlds.
Yeah, now we're going to the 1930s. But yeah, that was George Orwell, and he was a little bit too convincing. So we'll topic on that someday.
But Zach, right now, you need to convince me of a thing, because I don't know what you're going to talk about.
Neither do I. No, I'm kidding. I'm actually okay, so this week on let's talk about what name it is. I can cut that out. I probably won't. This week on Subject Unknown.
Plugging your headphones and turn your way up. We'll tell you something you didn't know. Pop culture or science or nonsense, here we got it all. Welcome to Subject Unknown.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, and then I did a little hand thing. No one could see it. It's a podcast.
Knowing who you are, I know exactly what hand thing you did. It's really funny to imagine.
You are absolutely correct. I know what you're thinking. You're absolutely correct.
I can't wait until we do some sort of video thing, and you do that one. And I could be like, "That's the one, guys.
That's the one. That's what I did." Right,
for everyone who can't imagine this, put your hands up to the sides of your head, as if I don't know, you're doing a really bad field goal or something, and just wave them around. That's Zach's hand motion.
That and then the Dante thing I used to do in freshman
year. Oh yeah. So you have to stare off into the middle distance with a really blank face and just wave your hands around. What's funny, guys, nobody knows this and nobody can confirm this, but I actually can't see your face. We're not on Zoom, we're on Discord.
Yeah.
But I still know exactly what you did.
Oh, God. Anyway, we said this episode's gonna be empty. I was going to be void of faffing, and immediately went back on that. So it's fine. It's good.
You literally faffed physically immediately with your hands.
Alright, so this episode we're going to be talking about chewing gum. Dante.
Oh my gosh.
What do you know about chewing gum?
Oh, dude. So I think you chew it.
Okay.
I think you use you don't use your teeth, yo. You use the gums of your mouth, right? And that's why it's chewing gum.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. You got it right. Except for all the parts they got wrong, which was okay. Well, first off, the thing is, chewing gum is not something that's unique to our generation, or even the last 10 generations, or even most of humanity, because humanity, for most of its history, has actually had some kind of version of chewing gum.
Okay, I think I knew this at least back to, like at least back one century, but, like, I'm not quite sure I knew past that.
it depends on how far you want to go with it, because it's not, you know, one for one chewing gum. It's
they had five gum back in Rome.
Yeah. It's this. There have been many civilizations going back 6,000 years that used different plants and different things as a chewing gum substitute.
Okay.
6,000 years ago, it was mastic tree bark.
To say bark as a joke, but yeah. It was real. All
right. The Eskimos had blubber. The Chinese had ginseng.
It's like a sap, right?
Yeah, they had plant.
It's ginseng. It's ginseng. It's in Arizona tea.
Yeah. And then there's like Native Americans had sugar pine and spruce sap. South Americans, cocoa leaves.
Oh, spruce sap. No, thank
you. Yeah.
Fun fact, we live in America. I know what spruce sap is. Ugh.
Yeah. I mean, the ancient Greeks chewed on mastic gum, which was made from the mastic tree. It had like antiseptic properties. But Dante, do you know what your gum that you chew every day on the podcast often? Do you know what it is made of?
Yes and no, because my mom tried to make some homemade gum years ago.
Oh no.
It was bad though.
Okay.
But I don't remember what she used because I was quite young, but I do remember that it looked, like this weird blob of, it looked like a blob of pre-chewed gum, but she had to like bake it and stuff. And then when we tried to eat it, it like ended up dissolving and becoming a really gross mush. So failed experiment, but I don't remember the ingredients. I remember there was one like really weird thing that was like the thing that made it chewy.
Yes. That would probably be the plasticizers.
It sounds right. There was one, like there was a specific whatever that she had, that she still has, I think, to this day, because it doesn't go bad, but she hasn't used it for anything.
Okay, I'm sorry. Continue.
No, go ahead. No.
Now, I could be wrong, but I had always heard as a rumor that back in the earliest form of chewing gum as we know it, I think back in the 1910s, 1920s, something like that, when we first created the first modern chewing gum, it was basically made with tar. It was like flavored tar.
Wow. You know, I love my fair share of tar.
Yeah. It was like tar.
Personally, I'm a fan of original flavor. no flavoring required. Organic tar.
Which, I mean, technically speaking, that's just what... There's just chewing gum loses flavor. That's just the original flavor.
Yeah. So, but my favorite is specifically organic tar. So.
Oh yeah, for sure.
These days, the only way I can replicate that is going and licking a freshly paved road.
Just wait till it's hot, and then you can get it to coat your mouth. When it melts,
It's so good.
Side story: where I grew up as a kid, it would get so hot.
That's vague. You grew up in too many places.
Yeah, when I lived in California, I lived in. This town called El Centro, which was the town that God forsook. And then humans lived there anyway. So it would get so hot in the summer that the tar would melt and our sneakers would melt at the same time.
That's terrifying.
And we would play basketball
And your shoes are just like disappearing.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it would just like you would just. It was just like the tar was melting, and our shoe. It would like because when tar gets hot, it has a little bit of give.
Yeah, yeah.
That but give is one thing. Sink is another. When you when the tar has some sink, then it's bad. And we
so as kids, we're always told to fear quicksand, but really you need to fear the quick tar.
Yeah, yeah. Oh god. And then on top of that. I remember there was one time me and my dad were walking somewhere, and we had noticed that there was a plant that had just like fallen, like from it was like from a stairwell leading up, a plant had fallen down, hit the sidewalk, and we saw that and went huh, and then we walked by, and when we came back, it was ash.
Oh my god!
It was like a black substance by that point.
If that's not a sign to get out, I don't know what is.
We left eventually. There was no water. There's no drinking water. We had to build man-made canals just to have drinking water.
Oh my gosh! Why did okay? Humans are stupid. Why do you go live in like this? Like the most like
okay
godforsaken places out there?
I can tell you exactly why. I can tell you why this place was made a town.
Okay.
It's because there's a certain type of grass, I believe, that was grown there.
Called marijuana.
Nope. It was like a specific type of grass that couldn't be that basically it would El Centro was one of the only places it could be grown. And it was used for other farms.
Why?
I don't know after that. But I do know that basically they would grow. And then they'd harvest, and then they would set their fields on fire.
Oh my gosh, guys!
So look, we would drive by, and there'd be like massive plumes of smoke.
Listen, I have a little fact for everybody. Okay, listen up here. There's other grass, okay? You don't need
this
that
is specific grass, I guess. I guess this is yeah.
What I love about that story is like. They essentially like we need this town because of grass.
Yeah,
the most
much.
Like prolific. Mundane thing ever. Like we need but I need that grass.
Yeah, exactly. So it was an interesting town. So yeah,
anyway, okay,
yeah. So yeah. Anyway, getting back on track, do you know what is in modern chewing gum?
No.
Okay, it is composed of a gum base, sweeteners, softeners, plasticizers, flavors, colors, and typically a hard or powered polyol? No, that's not
polyol.
P-O-L-P-O-L-Y-O-L.
Polyol.
Yeah.
Polyol.
Which is an organic compound containing multiple hydroxyl groups. The term polyol can have a slightly different meaning in food science and polymer chemistry. A molecule with more than two hydroxyl groups is a polyol, with three, a triol, with four, a tetrol. By convention, polyols do not refer to compounds that contain other functioning groups. That is a classification. Their sugar alcohols, a class of polyols, are commonly obtained by hydrogenation of sugars. They have the formula CHOH to the nth power, and then h to the second power, where n equals 4 minus 6.
Is this my punishment for mentioning weenuses last week?
This is very much your punishment. that was actually a year from now. And then it says, it's a texture, regarding chewing gum, it says, the texture is reminiscent of rubber because the physical chemical properties of its polymer, plasticizers, and resin components, which contribute to its elastic, plastic, sticky, chewy characteristics.
Okay.
Are you aware that this much science went into making your stick of chewing gum?
The only hint I had is when Willy Wonka made the one that wouldn't stop going.
I just have a thing here called bands of chewing gum.
Bands?
Yep.
Okay.
And it's the Singapore government outlawed chewing gum in 1992, citing the dangers of discarded gum being wedged in the sliding doors of underground trains and general cleanliness. However, in 2004, the government allowed sugarless gum to be sold in pharmacies if a doctor or dentist pre-described it due to the Singapore-United States Free Trade Agreement.
That's so funny. Imagine going to a pharmacy for your gum.
Did you know that that it's used in surgery?
No.
Okay. Several randomized controlled studies have investigated the use of chewing gum in reducing the duration of post-operative... this is bad. I have so many words I've never seen before. I-L-E... Oh, God. Oh, my God. What the frick? Oh, God. I wasn't ready for this. Oh, my God. All right.
Just what do they... Does they give it to the patient afterwards?
Okay. All right. Nope. Okay, so I looked up what that is, and I went to the Wikipedia article, which is it's talking about the post-operative I-L-E-U-S. And then, so I clicked on that, and I saw a picture of a man with a stomach cut open, and his lower, and his large intestines spilling out everywhere.
Ooh.
I was not ready for that. I thought I was looking at sausage at one point. I was like, oh my God. Freaking, okay.
Okay.
Anyway. Yeah, it's used in therapy, and yep.
Cool. One thing that I know about, while Zach repairs his mind over there, one thing that one little, like, useful thing about gum that I've discovered in my life is I had more chewing gum than, like, the rest of my family, because I would use it at work and stuff as just kind of, you know, it was nice to have while working, doing something else. And I discovered that it's actually good for, like, cleaning your teeth, because my teeth were always cleaner than the rest of my family's. And they were like, yeah, do you chew gum? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, yeah, it's good. Keep doing that. And I'm like, all right, cool.
Yeah, you gotta do sugar free.
Yeah, I mean, like, the sugar doesn't help, but, like, chewing gum, like, gets the bits out from between your teeth, essentially.
Yeah, right here it says sugar free gum sweetened by, with whatever. I'm so dumb with words I don't know today. Has been shown to reduce cavities and plaque.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I had less than my family, and they were like, good on you. Keep chewing gum. I definitely didn't chew the sugar-free gum, but it was still, like, better than the rest of my family's teeth, so...
Yeah, it's saying that basically, there's specific types. You have to pick the one that's been sweetened by a certain... There are a bunch of different sweeteners. I'm not going to say any of their names, because they're not real names. Someone just, like, slapped a bunch of vowels and letters together, and they laughed and said... Good luck saying this, and that's what we have now.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean,
well, for reference, I chose 5-gum because I like that one.
Okay. Yeah, well, 5-gum is, for the most part, that's sugar free.
Is it?
Yeah, you'll never know. Like, but
it doesn't taste like it.
Yeah, if you actually pay, I think the only gum that I know nowadays that actually has sugar in it, it's like Hubba Bubba and stuff like that, like the really obviously bad ones. But if you're chewing on like
mint 5-gum.
Experiment, like a mint gum, it's 99, like 9, it's 10 to 1 that's going to be sugar free.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Speaking and of which,
there's like fluoride in it, which is cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I actually had another revelation about gum.
What's that?
Okay, so this happened because I started working at the retail store that I work at now. I discovered that like 90% of gum brands are all owned by one company.
Yeah, so, it's a racket.
Yeah, so Wrigley's has like a monopoly on freaking gum, because like you never like look at the names, because it's, you know, it's Wrigley's Juicy Fruit or whatever, and then there's like Wrigley's Spearmint, but 5-Gum is owned by Wrigley's, Orbit is owned by Wrigley's, Extra is owned by Wrigley's, and they just repeat all these different like flavors, but they taste different and they're a different brand. And Wrigley's just has this monopoly over the gum industry. And I'm like, what the frick? Like,
and they're raising prices, let me tell you. I can't keep paying 98 cents for my pack of gum. It's too much.
I know. But I'm not saying, like, you know, it's not necessary. But it's, like, the only brand that I know of that isn't owned by Wrigley's that I think is Hubba Bubba.
Let's all run out and support Hubba Bubba.
And I was just like, oh, my gosh. Yeah. I think Tic Tacs are made by Wrigley's, too. It's just like, oh, like literally, like, it's like, you know, everybody's complaining about Disney owning the movie industry. Wrigley's already owns the gum industry. It's happened.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought
it was
really
they won their game of Monopoly. So anytime now, they'll be teaming up with Google and take over the world.
Yeah, exactly. I would not be surprised if Google owns Wrigley's. It's like how the candy industry is just Mars and Hershey's competing.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
and that's it. Anyway. So what's your favorite brand of gum, Zach?
I actually don't have.
Even though we just discovered that they're all owned by Wrigley's.
I guess it have to be Wrigley's. I guess I have no choice. I guess that's.
Mine's probably either Five or I really like Extra's watermelon. They have a really good watermelon that lasts for a while.
I think Orbit has these, and it might not be Orbit, but I think they have these, like, if I'm chewing it for fun, they have these, like, cubes. Comes in, like, a big packet.
Yeah.
And then those are a lot of fun. I really enjoy those.
Those are pretty fun. They're really fruity.
You get the mint ones. And then it comes in, like, these little cubes that you can
I've had the grape kind.
Yuck.
It wasn't my favorite, but it was good for, like, a novelty. Airheads makes gum. And it's, like, fruity gum. It's really good.
Yeah, man, you like fruity gum, huh?
I do like fruity gum, but it lasts way, like, it doesn't last as long. So if I want a gum that's like, you know, I'm gonna be chewing it for a solid, you know, few hours, then I'll go mint. But
okay.
I always enjoy the taste of the fruity gums.
I always wondered who liked
like fruity gum. Who are those for?
Like, yeah, I was like, is this just for kids or?
I don't like spearmint. I like mint.
Really? You don't like spearmint?
No, I don't like spearmint. I don't know why. It's like weirdly bitter to me. But I really
like
the
spearmint's the sweet mint. That's so weird.
I like normal mint or like peppermint, I think.
Wow.
I think spearmint's the one that's always green, right?
Yeah, and it's it is like the it's the sweeter mint.
No, it's bitter, but yeah.
No,
sure.
It's not. It's literally sweeter. That's the whole point.
Well, okay. So at some point, we're gonna have to do like a YouTube video because through my family, like my mom and me, and then my wife and my wife's mom, we have discovered that I have a really weird taste of sense of taste and smell.
I thought you were gonna say you literally sounded like you were about to say I have a really weird taste of Satan. And I was like, well,
I got the touch of the devil in my soul. I have a really weird taste sense of taste and smell because certain things that like most people find really abrasive, I think are fine. Like, okay, this is going to sound weird, but skunk smells like coffee to me. It just smells like coffee. It smells like really intense coffee and I don't necessarily want to be around it, but it just smells like coffee. Other things like that. It's like I have a really weird sense. So we'll have to do a test on YouTube sometime, like showing how strange my sense of taste is.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Like literally just skunk just smells like strong coffee, like strong, intense, maybe sour black coffee. But that's it.
The more adjectives you add, the more it sounds like a normal sense of smell. You're like, it smells like coffee, like strong coffee, like strong, sour, skunky coffee. It smells like skunk. It's like, okay, yeah, well, we got there.
But like, it is a skunk smell, but it's not like everybody else when they smell a skunk, they're like, whoa. And I'm just like, this is coffee, dude.
This is sweet. Roll down the windows. Let it in. Yeah. Let's bathe in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, everyone's sense of, that's the weirdest thing about people is that you can take two people and have them witness the same event and both of them will walk away with two different perspectives on what happened.
They
can actually be counter to each other. They can literally be
opposite stories
and both will be convinced that what they're saying is right.
Yeah,
it's crazy. Oh man. So
yeah, dude, it's really weird. I don't know what I was about to say. I had something. It's like the theory of like how do we see the same colors? Because like we from like childbirth, we've been told that like this color is this thing. But it's like, you know, I could see a different color, but just identify it as like, yeah. Anyway, whatever. That's another topic in and of itself. But yeah,
I mean, yeah, that's the thing. It's like when you start going down that sort of esoteric thought process, it's like, you know, is my version of green the same as everyone else is? Is yeah. everyone else seeing what I see as blue when they say green?
But I've just been told it's green. So
but I've been told it's green. And when yeah. I point to things, we all agree that's green. Like, I'm seeing green, but to them it's blue. Like,
but they have identified it as green.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's so weird. And then it's like, you know, is there even an objective color? Like, can we definitively say that, like, one thing has an objective color? Or is it all just one person said, hey, that's red, and we're all like, cool, even though we're all technically seeing different colors?
I mean, yeah, it's basically the way it works is that you're seeing the absence of color. Which means that I get into the fact that color is what the human mind perceives the environment around us.
So surely it looks different.
I'm no scientist. I'm no biologist. I don't know exactly how this works, but I like the idea that our brain is so simple that we have to. It's complex, but it's so like it goes with simplest solutions. So rather than trying to comprehend all the colors, it just comprehends the one that's missing.
Yeah, that is pretty funny.
And it's like, so what? Yeah. So then, if that's the thing too, is that like, if you think about it, we as people, we all perceive things similarly because of how we're built. There's discrepancies, but not as many between us and like a dog. So
yeah.
So, what if the world around us is like. What if this is like stoner talk, but what if the world around us is just insane by comparison, and we're only able to see so much? Like, yeah, we're limited in our ability to see what's going on around us, but if you could objectively step outside the human body and just observe, like, there's just nonsense going on around us that we can't see.
Yeah,
oh,
dude.
Man,
that's like
Lovecraftian stuff right there, man.
Yeah, it's Lovecraft and definitely stoner talk, but I feel like this podcast dips into stoner talk a lot.
That's the point. That's what else are we here for?
It's just fun, yeah. Yeah.
If you don't want to do drugs, but you want to talk like you're doing drugs, welcome to this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I did want to ask you, I don't know, maybe this is dumb, but Zach, what flavor of gum are you? BuzzFeed needs a quiz for this. They probably have one, but I'm not going to look.
I'm probably winter mint. I'm a little bit too bitter and strong.
What? No, winter mint's the best. What are you talking about?
I would winter mint too, but
winter mint's like intense mint. It's the best one.
Yeah, it's not the one people. It's not like, but it's not the one that people go to for a good time. It's
yeah,
like
it is.
I disagree. I'm like, okay, then I'm like black coffee. So I'm not okay. Even gum. Forget the gum. It's like, what flavor of gum are
you're
you?
You're the gum
coffee?
Flavor of black coffee. And it's just yeah. You bite into it and you're like, ah!
What is this?
This assaulting bitter taste.
Is it grape? Oh! Why is it skunk flavored? I don't understand.
You're like this experiment that the gum factories went into to try gum coffee, or like, yeah, coffee gum.
Yeah,
it was horrible, but then some mischievous worker who's like tired of working in the factory slipped it into a pack of grape gum. And so some poor person just bites on there like, ah!
Yeah, that's me. I trick you with a label of grape. It's like, oh, he seems pleasant. And then you get to know me for more than 5 minutes. Like, oh! And it's just vomiting everywhere.
I like to imagine that I'm like the orange flavor because nobody ever buys the orange flavor. But if you had it, you'd be like, this is okay, I guess.
That's your opinion of yourself, huh? No one wants me. But if people get to know me, they'll be like, eh.
Yes!
I wasn't missing much. It's fine.
It's like, okay, so anytime I go to the gum section of my retail store, there's like the bottom right corner is the tropic flavor of orange. And I just look at it and it's like the ostracized child of the gum. It's just like, that's me. Also, Zach, if you wanted to go with abrasive, you should have been cinnamon.
I like cinnamon. I don't think cinnamon's too much of a problem.
It's not great.
I think spice... I don't know. I think in my worst days I'm cinnamon, and on my best days.
No, on your best days you're probably like a mint. You're probably a mint.
Yeah, on my worst days I'm probably a cinnamon. Yeah.
You're probably a mint, and I'm probably like one of those fruit flavors that
you're
like,
fine. You're like okay. I want to point this out, but like you're talking about like, oh, no one wants me. You were like adored at our college.
Okay, all right.
You were like everyone's favorite. And then
are we gonna do this story?
Which one?
This is the college story.
Was that?
No, okay, so the general, I'm talking the grand college story. Okay, the reason I was, so we went to it like a Christian community college, right? And the reason that I was adored.
It was a university. No, I got it.
They had just become
my
a university.
My degree needs to mean something. Anyway.
I'm sorry. They were a university. They used to be a community college. When we went, like that year, they became a university. It was a whole debacle with the name and everything. That's another story.
There's a lot of stories and a lot of thoughts. I can't go on the record until I'm
you're
until
off.
I get,
yeah. off
the yeah. Record. Until I get my first master's done, then I can go. Yeah, off, yeah. Then I go on the record.
This will be a through line through the podcast, I'm sure, of me rambling about this school and you like hinting that you agree with me, but not saying anything definitively.
Yeah.
Anyway, Zach and I went there the same year, but I wasn't a college student. I was dual enrolling in high school. So I was, I think, 16. And I went on campus and I took like 4 classes or whatever, and it counted as college credit and finishing up.
Don't sell yourself short. You were 15 when you got there.
Was I?
Yeah, you were young.
Well, okay, yeah. So I was 15, and then like the next month I turned 16.
Yeah.
It counted as college credit and high school, essentially. So like I had, I had to do an English class, a math class, and like a science class and whatever. And it counted as college credits for those things, but also it counted as my high school English and math and whatever. So I went there but I'm really freakishly tall. Everybody just assumed that I was like one of the other freshmen. And I became friends with multiple freshmen, including Zach. And then on like my birthday, I was walking. Zach knows this story better, but we were walking to the cafeteria, mm-hmm. and I mentioned it was my birthday, I was talking about I wanted my beard to grow in more, and you were like, "You're like 19, dude. It's kind of done." And then I was like, "No, I'm like 16."
That's like, right. What? Yeah, yeah. You were like, "That's right." You were like, "Oh man, I really want my beard to grow more." And I'm like, I looked at you and went like, "You're kind of at the point." Which, by the way, I was wrong. Which started a long trend of me saying things I didn't know, like talking very confidently about subjects I knew nothing about. But I was wrong. Even if you were 19, your beard like it thickens, and I think once you hit your 30s, I think that's when you start reaching like a more. So yeah. I was wrong, but I was basically going like, you're already 19, right? You're probably
like, done.
Yeah,
and then I'm like, no, I'm 16. You're like. What? No, you're not.
Yeah, yeah. We literally became friends because I mistook you for someone else. another really, he's a friend of ours, and I became friendly with this other like really tall, lanky dude.
Yeah. What's funny is I don't look like him. Like he's blonde. Like.
No. Not Chablabla. Carl.
Oh,
and
you look like Carl,
yeah. But when you first meet, like Carl, obviously there's 100 differences. If you meet 100 people on your first day, and one of them is tall, lanky, has brown hair and glasses, you can't. There's too much sensory input, so you just go. Yeah.
And what's funny is I'm better friends with you now than presumably because you haven't seen Carl in a while.
No, we're best friends. We play golf on the weekends. It's good.
It's good.
Yeah, we have salad once a month.
So we became friends. So the reason I became popular in the school, and to be fair, it was only what was our class? Like maybe
it was 500.
I was gonna say 500.
It wasn't huge, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so you kind of got to know the general gist of everybody there. And obviously you had your crowd, but I hung out with this one dorm of guys generally the first year, and then I met some other people. I met Zach, obviously. And I just became famous on campus because I was in high school. That's the only reason. And I was the first of like a wave of dual enrollment students that came next year. In this wave. And so because of that, I rode this wave of like fame because I was this guy that looked like he belonged on campus, but secretly he was like 4 years younger than everybody else.
Yeah. And the thing was too, the rest of the high schoolers, dual enrolled students, They all looked like they were, these, like, even the ones who were, like, 16, 17, they looked like they were 12.
Yeah,
and they're, like, they're, like, running around, and they're playing sports, and you're, like, that's so cute. Look at them. They think they're people. It's so cute. It's adorable. But you didn't do that. You were, like, and they would come on campus for, like, a couple hours and then leave.
And I was on campus, like, all day, because that was basically where my friend group was.
And it was just, I think it was situational, too, with how your rides worked. You were just kind of, you showed up early, and then were here pretty much all day.
I would ride with my dad to work, and he drove in at, like, 6 a.m., and then I would stay there till about 6 p.m., so I was there effectively as if I was on campus.
Yeah, exactly. So we just kind of assimilated you. Especially dorm. Yeah, Dante's couch became a thing.
Dante's seat, yep. Because I would, one of the only places that was open at 6 a.m. was one of the dorms. So I would just go to the common room area and sleep on one of the couches until like 8 a.m.
Because it was like, that's, what else are you going to do, you know? So
Yeah. So anyway, I was famous on a college campus for no good reason. And that's bubblegum, guys. I had bubblegum at the college.
Yeah.
There we go.
Their rules were weird, too, because I remember, especially the last few years, I had my own room, and it was like, there were times where you were just sitting here super late, but if I wanted you to just be, if you wanted to stay, it wasn't just like you were just allowed to crash. It's like, and I was like, well, he has to, technically speaking, rent, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, how, what else is being, it's an empty bed, like, what else is being used here? I don't understand.
Yeah. I really want to tell a story, but I don't know if I should until you're done with your doctor, your master's, or whatever.
No, go ahead. What's the worst that can happen?
Okay, so
I can always end it out if it's too bad. So
well, this is the time that I stayed with you for like a week.
That's fine. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So
the one where I woke up half awake and you.
I was like, hey, I need to stay here, and you're like, okay.
No. Because what? Can we talk about what was going on at the time?
Well, my family had lice. That was the actual reason. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had seen Dante earlier that night. I go to sleep.
Sorry. For my side of the story, real quick, leading up to this, I was at this campus like all day, and then I went home, and Mom was like, "Hey, we have lice. Do you want to go stay like at the campus?" And I'm like, "Okay, let me go grab some clothes and I'll run out." Because I didn't have lice because I was away from home so much.
Yeah.
Even though I lived there, I would, like, go there to sleep and then leave, like, immediately. And at that point, I had a car. That was year two. So I would just leave. I had bones. Yeah, that's another story.
And I go back to the color sight thing as well.
Yeah. But anyway, so I would, so I wasn't home enough to get the lice that everybody else has. So she was like, "Hey, why don't you stay away so you don't have to put peanut butter in your hair or whatever." Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. So I went went to Zach. And then Zach's side of the story.
Yeah, so we had seen each other earlier that night, and he had gone home. And I had gone to bed. It was like, I had gone to bed early. I had to be up early the next day. And it was like 10 o'clock at night, and I wake up to someone. Well, I would say someone knocking on the door, but it was just you kind of entering the room, going, Zach. And I'm like,
"Yep."
And I'm like, "Yeah, what's up?" And you go, "Hey, my family has lice." And that's all I heard. I think you said more than that. And you go, "Well, my family has lice." And I go, "Dante, that's very considerate of you, but I'm bald. I don't have to worry about lice." And I kind of missed the point.
I love that you thought all the way back to campus, which is like a 20-minute drive, just to tell you that I had lice.
And I'm like,
I spent the whole day with you.
And I'm like, it's so sweet. Even though you're bald. I'm like, it's so sweet. I'm immune.
What's funny, though, is you're not immune because you had the biggest beard ever. And I'm like, you can get lice with your beard.
I have since became a rational person about the beard. It's more manageable now.
But yeah, so we ended up staying, like, I ended up staying on campus for, like, kind of a little bit in secret because I didn't want to pay the money to, like, rent the room. It was like 100 nights, it was 100 bucks. It was essentially like owning a hotel room. And I was like, I don't need to pay that.
Yeah,
plus, I'm here
like
enough already.
It was 15 bucks a night, but it was like, there was a separate room And you could go. There was like a separate building. You could go there and stay there.
Oh yeah, but visitors. they would get mad if you stayed there too many nights because then they wanted you to pay like the actual, you know, yearly whatever thing for room and board. And yeah, I was like, I'm not doing that. And I think I ended up getting out of. So the first time I stayed at the school, I like was above board about it, and we talked to the dorm leader or whatever, and he was like, cool, you just got to pay this thing. I don't think I ever paid that.
No. If you wanted to stay for like a day, they were usually really cool about it. They were like, he's a student, who cares, feel free to stay.
It wasn't like I got free food or whatever. I had to pay for that separately.
It was like there was an extra bed, so you can feel free to stay and hang out, you know.
But then it
got later and they started going like, well, you know, he's going to have to, you know, do this and do this.
And I think part of that was because it was year two and there were other dual enrollment students. So like I actually, because of me like starting this dual enrollment movement, the school had to develop rules for dual enrollment students because they didn't have any before. It was just like, this is a student, I guess. He's paying for college classes, but whatever. Okay, cool. But then, like, a wave of us came, and they're like, all right, we have to set up different rules for them because of this one annoying kid. So
those rules got ridiculous. They were like,
It was like, by the end of it, by the time I left my second year, it was, like, not worth it to be dual enrolled at the school.
No.
But before that, it was super worth it.
Yeah, because it was just show up and do classes, but now it's like, well, you have to do this, and you have to do this, and well, we need you here. But it was basically, I can't get too much into it because I'm in trouble.
But anyway,
but it was always a little ridiculous to me that it's like, oh well, you need to stay here, but if you stay for a week, then you need to pay for this, that, and the other thing. And I'm going, I have an extra bed. Like, he's not going to use, like, he might charge his computer, but like other than that, the cost of him. Whether the bed is filled or not, the cost is the same to you guys. Yeah. And all at a point, it became all it was, well, we need to get more money out of him for this. It's like, come on.
Yeah. So essentially, Zach smuggled me in his room for like 5 days.
Yeah. We had, it was like a real big deal. And then, like, certain people couldn't know about
Yeah. About and that. And then by the end of it, you were like, all right, by the end of it, you were getting pretty stressed. But then I was like, all right, I can go home.
So. Yeah. It was like a week. By the week mark, it was like, okay, they're going to come after me now. I don't need a bunch of fines. So it was like, and that's you. That was around the same time. Yeah, you were.
Yeah, it was fine. Anyway, they got rid of the lice, and I was like, all right, cool. And then I went home. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, that was gum.
It's me, Zach. I cower in the face of danger.
No, that was really nice of you. But yeah, that was fun. All right, Zach.
Hi, nope, everyone.
Nope, stop.
We're back. Nope. We didn't leave. There hasn't been another 6 months.
Zach, I had this.
It's now September 2019.
Piece of crap. I had this whole planned out thing to make it seamless, and then you had to just bulldoze it and ruin it.
But I'm the one. I'm the one editing these things anyway. So even if you had made it seamless, I would have made it really obvious. Or
no, you wouldn't have.
Dante's trying to make this seamless, but in actuality. We broke.
Zach,
like,
we both know you would not have done that. You're too lazy.
Oh, you. Oh, but boy. Okay, I can't wait for you to hear some of these episodes.
All right. anyway, yeah, let's move on to Opinionated.
Understand my opinion? Well, it's just cause I'm smarter than you. I'm more evolved, I understand the subtleties. My opinion ain't opinion, it's truth.
I like how you keep referencing the music, like you have to say that it's there every single time, even though we could just like let the music play and then move on.
We could, but we're not going to. There's a thing, right? there's this thing called professionalism. I don't have it. We're never going to have this.
I feel like with a show structured this way, we can't have it. It's just impossible.
Yeah, no, I feel like the literal name of the podcast is a reference to the idea of irreverence. So let's
exactly.
Roll with it. The whole point is that this is supposed to be somewhat inane. And if we're not doing that, we're not living up to the name, so.
Yeah. Anyway, so this is Opinionated, where we talk about something that that is, you know, quite a heated debate usually.
We talk about something that some of us care about and others Yes.
This one, Zach, initially you weren't sold on, but having talked it through with you a little bit, this one I think applies to everyone. I think every single person on the planet that has experienced breakfast has an opinion on this argument and just doesn't know it yet.
Yeah.
Because they didn't know it was an argument.
Yeah, so what happened was he pitched this argument to me and I was like, yeah, it kind of feels like a weak argument. And then we start talking about it and I start getting really into it. And I go, I'm like, who cares about this argument? It's like, oh, apparently me. I care about it. So
so the breakfast argument is, and I've heard this on another podcast. I think it was Shut Up a Second that I heard on first on, and I had very strong opinions on it, as did the people on that podcast. And basically, the argument is, so I work an overnight shift, right? So I wake up at about 5 p.m., and I have a meal with my wife that she has prepared. Is that dinner or breakfast for me and consequently my wife? I would say it's dinner across the board. Doesn't matter that I just woke up. Breakfast meals are not relative.
Okay, here's the thing. I am with you. If you had gotten up at 8 in the morning and then at 5 in the and then if you had eaten nothing all day and so dinner is your first meal, and then if someone turned around and said, oh, I'm eating breakfast, I'd be like, no, you're an idiot. You're eating dinner. It's like, it is your choice. You failed to eat. This is dinner. Shut up. You're wrong. And, but the fact that your schedule is different because of that, subjectively to you, you are eating breakfast. And if we want to get into the meaning of that word, the literal meaning of breakfast is to break your fast, the fast that you started when you went to sleep. So when you break your fast, you were eating breakfast.
But Zach,
yes.
Okay, here's the thing. So this is the crux of my argument. So back when the term breakfast was invented, right? I'm gonna create this word painting for you. All right. Back when the word breakfast was created. We were on a set schedule. Say they were farmers, probably, right? And they had to wake up with the dawn to, you know, start making making the crops and whatever, making their livelihood. Say there's a father and a son, and the son sleeps through their beginning meal of the day. And then he wakes up at about noon, and he gets up and goes to have lunch with his father. His father would say, son, you missed the breaking of the fast.
Agreed.
Which means that breakfast is an objective time thing.
No.
He missed it.
Agree.
No.
That son is on that time schedule. You are on a different time schedule.
No, I'm not.
Yes,
no, you are.
By definition, you are on a different time schedule. And if if you slept in, I'm with you. If someone sleeps in and then has lunch, I'm with you. But if someone that's because they're still on. That's what I said earlier. That's because they're still on the morning to night schedule.
No, time schedules doesn't matter.
Disagree
entirely.
I
wake up,
it is,
no. Listen. No.
I have the definition of the word. If you want to hear it.
No, when I wake up at 5 p.m., I do not get up and have breakfast. I have dinner with my wife.
No, you wake up and have breakfast. Because
the
definition of the word is, breakfast is the first meal taken after rising from sleep. Most often eaten in the morning before undertaking the day's work. Most often does not mean always. That means literally.
But there is a social... Like, there is a social definition of meals that pertains to a part of the day. And that's why certain restaurants don't serve breakfast foods after, you know, a certain time or whatever.
Right, but you...
That means that there is an objective time for those meals. So when I wake up at 5 p.m., I am having dinner as my first meal. I'm still breaking my fast, but as I'm having dinner,
but you're
not breakfast.
Because as
I am.
You're saying societally that's how it works. But as a member of the overnight crew, you are an outcast from society by definition because you are no longer... And that's not a joke. That is literally, you are no longer a member of regular society because you work at an inverse schedule to the rest of society. You are an exception. So therefore, you are now, by definition, working in your own rules, working under your own rules because you are in a subsection of society, sir. You do not fit into the category of a normal member of society.
Listen. You're arguing my point because I don't fit in. I'm an exception to the rule. So I'm an exception to the normal meal times. And that's why I start my day with dinner instead of breakfast. Because everybody else starts their day with breakfast.
No, by definition, you are exempt from it. So basically, in all reality, what it is it is your first meal. So are you arguing? So the question is breakfast the first meal or is breakfast the morning meal? That is the crux of
the argument. Breakfast is the morning meal.
No. The word for morning meal is comes from an old English term, which was morgen metta. But breakfast is not the same word. Breakfast was adopted to replace morgen metta when that became the because eventually that was known as the first meal, and for most people,
yes,
the first
exactly.
meal was
morning. So now the language has
the actual
it doesn't matter because the language
it does. This is
no,
because you're not eating because you're not eating morgen metta. You're correct. You are not eating that meal. You are no longer your morgen metta is at. And I'm saying, and I'm sorry for anyone who's I'm assuming there's not many, but for anyone who's anyone who's adept in Old English, I'm butchering this word. I'm so sorry. I'm not an expert. But that word, like you eat that at the end of the day, agreed, because of how you are. But breakfast is not the same word as that. Breakfast just means the first meal taken after
sleep. No, but listen. Okay, so you said that breakfast has been co-opted to mean morgen metta now. Because of that,
no,
the word
just,
and the language... No, listen,
no, no.
The
it's
word
just,
the word and the language... The word and... No, listen, the word and
no,
the language
I'm
have
to
evolved.
You, but you're
because
arguing
language...
from a misunderstanding. You are arguing from a wrong place. I am listening. You're saying, well, it's co-opted. It's not co-opted. And what I'm saying is that the two became synonymous only because the general public, but the two are not,
yes,
not the
yes, but
same
the
definition.
Okay, now that means something different now socially. Now we have a social construct that is breakfast, which means the morning meal.
Sure.
It has certain meals that are associated with that. Because of that, breakfast no longer can apply to breaking the fast.
That's not
it's
true.
Like how...
That is not how language works, sir. That is a simplistic misunderstanding of how language works.
That's like how ass used to just mean donkey, but now it's become a vaguely inappropriate word for a butt.
And some words, they take on new meanings, but that does not...
Like breakfast.
But that does not take away their original meaning. That is a
no, but it means that their original meaning is...
Works.
It means their original meaning is now antiquated and no longer used. Therefore, the only practical use of the word is the current usage.
That's not always true, because there's still times where that antiquated version of the word is still relevant and necessary. And understanding the true meaning of words is incredibly important. You cannot
okay,
you
but
cannot
also, we live in a society...
Simply because you misunderstand what the word means does not mean that you are correct. You're still wrong.
Even if
you have everyone on your side.
I don't misunderstand what the word means because
breakfast
breaking of the fast cannot be a subjective thing because multiple people are involved in the creation of breaking that fast because, you know, certain people make the meals or whatever, so that's a set thing.
No, that's not true, actually. It's a personal, individual basis, and it is the first meal taken. Additionally, I'd also say it's like arguing that, oh, well, we don't use it that way anymore, so it doesn't mean that anymore. It's not true. It just means that you don't use it like that anymore. It's why
yes, but
word,
that doesn't matter anymore, like, because now, societally, we don't use it like that anymore.
That's
effectively,
that's
the word means the new meaning.
That's inane. That's inane, and it's
yeah,
a,
but
it's,
we live in an inane society.
Right. But you don't live in the society. I just said that. You are exempt from that society, and by definition, you live outside of it. You, sir, do not eat morgen metta. But you do eat breakfast.
Yes, at 8 a.m. when I come home.
Nope. First meal of the day. First meal of the day is breakfast.
No, I don't. The only time that breakfast is permissible to be moved from the morning slot of food is when we have a breakfast food for another meal.
Nope,
for instance, breakfast for dinner.
Entirely disagree, because that's all. What is for breakfast is subjective to culture. Also, the only argument that you have right now is because of the ignorance of society that I'm right because of ignorance. That is what you are arguing. That's not a great argument. That is literally, I'm choosing to be ignorant of the meaning of a word and therefore I'm correct.
But I refuse to stay in a world where the breaking of the fast can be so subjective that it doesn't matter. Anyone's breakfast can be anything.
Pretty much.
That's ridiculous. That is a chaotic hellhole of a world.
Well, that's where you live.
I refuse to live in it.
That's where you live, pal. I'm sorry.
No, I
don't. Yes, you do. You are literally an example of that. Because you
I am an example of how dinner and breakfast and lunch are objective meal times.
You literally are an example of a chaotic world because there is no finite constructs. You work in an opposite time schedule to everyone else. You are.
That doesn't matter.
Yes, it does.
I live in an I live in an opposite time schedule to everyone else. So I have odd meals. For instance, my first meal is dinner because I live in an opposite time schedule to everyone else, and it's freaking weird.
By definition, your first meal is breakfast.
By definition, I don't care. No.
Right. Okay. So then let's get to that. Let's get down to that then. So basically, what you're saying is. Functionally,
what I'm saying is that breakfast societally refers to both certain foods in our culture and in many cultures that we tend to have at the beginning of a day, and also refers to the first meal of the day in a specific time. And when certain people don't adhere to that time, like myself, because I have that, then we have co-opted the word in such a way that it doesn't matter. It's not my breaking of the fast anymore. We have set meals. We have set foods that go with those meals that sometimes we enjoy breaking the rules of, but it doesn't matter.
No, it's still by definition your breaking of the fast. It still is.
Well, this is our impasse, Zach, because I refuse to live in a chaotic world where breakfast and meals are just subjective and can be anyone's anything.
Oh, you're saying there's no subjective truth?
Yeah, there's objective.
I said subjective.
No, I'm saying there is objective truth.
So
who cares about subjective?
So then you also got to talk, and then you have to look at things like you're saying, well, only these foods. Okay, well, in other cultures, they eat extremely different.
I'm saying those other cultures, that's a different society, and they have their own rules.
Right, but there are words for breakfast in other societies.
Yeah, that they have at the beginning of the day.
So if you were in Peru, but what if the definition is the meal after you sleep? So
in their society, they use that word to mean the meal that they have at whatever their equivalent of 8 a.m. is.
What I'm arguing is that it's incredible. It's an incredibly asinine thing to think that. Breakfast is an objective truth.
I think it's asinine to believe that breakfast is subjective.
There's no law of the universe that says the gravity is a law of the universe. Gravity
no,
is an objective
but societally,
truth. But
no, we have dis-
society by definition. Society is what we create. So by definition,
yes,
much of society
we have
is
created
subjective.
A new meaning for this word, and the way we use the word
and
has
so
informed
so, and so it's
what it means.
Subjectively true, but it's not objectively true. It can't be. If you live in a society, then societies can be. Based on objective truths, but much of society's rules are based on subjective truths. That's how we function. It's based
okay,
on beliefs.
Okay, so I guess what
like,
I'm saying
like democracy,
is that
democracy is not objective truth any more than fascism or a monarchy are objective truths. They are things that people believe in. They're things that people subscribe to, but they're not functions of the universe. Like,
okay, guess what I'm subscribing to is the idea that subjectively our society has decided that breakfast is the meal that we have at 8 a.m. instead of breakfast being a subjective thing. So I'm saying that basically breakfast is subjective to the group instead of the individual.
Anyway, I'm going to leave that in so everyone can think, like, oh, my phone went off of me. Let me No, I
so
think
clearly
that,
we disagree.
Yeah, but no, the biggest thing is that.
We're gonna have to leave this, Zach, because I think we fundamentally disagree, which is what happens every time anyone brings up this argument. It just ends with we have to agree to disagree.
Have you considered there's a common denominator in that?
I haven't been in every argument of this I've heard. If that's what you're implying.
No, I know. I'm saying it's the argument. You're not the common denominator.
Hello.
Where'd you go? I lost you.
Zach.
No. Hi.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
There we go.
Where'd you go? All
right. Yeah. We're back.
No, I was saying you're not the common denominator. It's the argument itself. That's what I was saying.
The argument's stupid. I agree.
No, the argument is basically, I understand.
It's definition versus function.
To be clear, I fully understand his side of the argument, and I don't think his the argument is wrong per se.
We just have to disagree.
I also just don't think that he's any more right than someone arguing against. I honestly think the whole thing is basically one side is going, it can be anything, and the other side is going, no, it can only be this thing. When in actuality, it can be anything, but the personal preference of the other people is that it can only be this one thing. But they're not wrong for thinking it's only this one thing, and we're not right for disagreeing. So it's just, it's basically one of those arguments where, by definition, if you take the side of subjectivity, you're correct, but you'll also never win the argument.
Yeah, it's an argument between definition and function, and they never agree.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, basically, and so for anyone who's curious, ultimately, if Dante wants to have his first meal as dinner because it's subjective, he's correct. Where he is not correct is that he thinks that it's objectively dinner.
It is though.
I'm trying to wrap this up. There's no law of the universe that says that.
But there's a law of society.
Right, but society by definition is subjective.
Yes, but I'm saying it's subjective to the group of society, not the group of one person.
Right, and I understand that what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is, first off, there's no law in play. If we were arguing like you can't murder, like okay, and then like that murdering is wrong by societal standards. And then it becomes like, okay, that's where a subjective truth becomes objective due to the situation you're living in. But there's no law about breakfast.
There should be.
There's not. So there's by definition, it is all subjective. The argument becomes more muddled when there's laws involved, because even though on a grand scale it's subjective, in your life it might be objective. So it's one of those. It's complicated.
And also, I think it's become more removed from the individual because of things like businesses that run on meals and meal times.
Sure.
So
yeah, and I get that, but at the same time, ultimately, and it's like, you know,
it's like when it was a big deal that McDonald's made their breakfast meal available all day.
Yeah. Exactly. So. You know, that's my final stand on it, is that realistically it can, this is an average conversation for God, yeah.
My wife won't let me bring this up anymore because she so strongly disagrees with me, and it always ends with us disagreeing.
You, when someone argues,
it sounds like you're about to insult me.
No, not at all. When someone argues with you, you are like, when you feel passionately about it, man, you'll swing, which is fine for me because I enjoy arguments. It's tough for people who don't enjoy arguments because they can't let things get heated and then walk away and be like, yeah, it was fun. It was an argument. It was fun. It was like this is for entertainment. You have to fight strong the argument, and afterwards you're like, all right, cool, good job. And then we move on to the next thing. It's like, but there's, I do understand there are people that can't do that. So.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm. I love my wife, to be clear.
I don't think that was in question.
All right. Shall we move on to ruminations?
Yeah, sounds good.
Does it bother anybody else? Do the bad guys in Power Rangers always come back 100 times bigger, and it's rarely explained? Like in the first one or two, there'll be a scroll or a spell that'll bring those bad guys all the way back from hell as a massive kaiju. But after that, they never bother. It just becomes the norm, man. When it comes to Power Rangers, what's going on?
Ruminations, dun, dun, dun. Okay.
I'll leave that in. That's gonna be the theme song today.
We're only like 5 episodes in. We can't start cutting his music now. It's too good.
I think we're 4. I have no idea.
This is 4. I don't know. I think this is 4.
Yeah, I mean, we had that 3-month gap in between the first half of this episode and the last half.
Yeah, so. The world fell apart in between the first half and the second half.
No, what are you talking about? It's September 2019.
But we recorded the first part in October 2019. Okay, so do you want to start with your rumination or shall I start with mine?
I'm still trying to figure out the math in this. I'm like, so at what point did we go back in time?
I don't think so. You said 3 months passed between us recording the first half of this episode and the second half. And last episode, the first half of the episode, I'm pretty sure you said it was October 2019.
It was. 2019. No, it was. And we're in September 2019. So how did time...
January. We're in January.
No, we're
right?
not. We're so I can see. Do you see?
Did the guy eat the bat yet?
Dante,
I don't remember.
Dante,
when did that happen? Dante, no, Australia's on fire. That's what happened.
You guys can't see this. I'm holding up a calendar. You don't know that yet. I'm holding up a calendar for Dante to see. You can't see this.
Sorry, I saw you flipping through your calendar, and I saw January 2020, and I saw marked on a date. It said Australia's
on fire. Don't look at the calendar. Don't look at the calendar. I made the mistake looking at the calendar. You don't want to look at the calendar. Anyway, does everyone look here? We're in September 2019. That's,
okay.
That's why
right.
there's the red arrow that says you are
is
here.
Is it my birthday yet?
Yeah, happy birthday.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. You're
I'm 20 again.
You're 20 again. Hey! Wish I was 20 again. Hey, happy birthday.
Cool.
Happy birthday song right. day. I think we should all sing the happy birthday song. Later,
nope.
Tomorrow, yesterday, who knows? So yeah. Anyway, I'm gonna put the calendar
by the next episode we might be so far back in time that I'm not 20 anymore.
Yeah, anyway, I'm gonna put the calendar back in the box.
I hate that box. Zach,
yes.
Shall I start with ruminations or shall you?
You start. You start, and then I have one, right. But I gotta think about how to say it.
Okay, so my ruminations is essentially my problems with sitcoms. Because, Zach, I've watched quite a few sitcoms.
Okay.
I've watched... unfortunately, I haven't watched the one that's like your favorite, but I don't think I currently have access to it. Yeah. For context, Zach's favorite is Frasier.
Yep. And CBS All Access took it, but because of how they did Picard, I will never support them. So.
Yeah. I don't like CBS All Access. The only thing I'll watch on there is Discovery, but I became uninterested. Yeah. Anyway. So I've watched, let's see, Friends. I've watched bits of quite a few episodes of Cheers. I've seen... I guess BoJack Horseman counts as a sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
What are other sitcoms that I've seen? I'm trying to think of all the sitcoms that aren't mentioning the three best ones. Big Bang Theory. I've seen a lot of Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, I mean, there's King of Queens, Kevin Can Wait, which are all Kevin James.
I've seen quite a few episodes of Malcolm in the Middle.
Joey. The Friends spinoff that went nowhere. Yeah.
Joey had his own spinoff.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Even things How I Met Your Mother.
I think technically, does Rick and Morty count?
No, it's not a sitcom.
It's okay. All right.
I think there's very specific rules about a sitcom, and
okay.
I mean,
because their spinoff show that's not really connected, but like Solar Opposites is more. It seems more like a sitcom. I haven't watched it, but it seems more like a sitcom than Rick and Morty. I don't know.
Well, that might be a sitcom.
Also, I've seen Bob's Burgers. Bob's Burgers is great.
Is that a sitcom?
That's a sitcom.
The Simpsons and Family Guy. Are they sitcoms?
I think so.
Okay. So I don't know. Yeah.
Because they follow the same formula. They're just animated.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay.
I've tried. Okay. So as a clarification, I don't know why, but I don't think Matt Groening humor blends with me for some reason, because I've tried to watch all of his shows. Sometimes multiple times. Like, I've tried to get into Futurama 2 or 3 times now.
Yeah.
And I've gotten quite a few episodes in, and just every time I'm just not interested. I don't know why. It's just like, for some reason, that's just not my humor. So if you like that, that's great. But I can't.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I've come to
even though they're very popular shows.
I've come to appreciate that humor more, because I think when we were kids, it was like shocking. But since we've grown up, things like Family Guy have come out. Shows that are significantly Rick and Morty, just shows that are so much more shock. BoJack Horseman,
Yeah.
So that, like, shock value the Simpsons have because, you know, like, Homer attacks his kids or they swear. It's like, that kind of goes away.
That's kind of gone now. Yeah.
You know, like, people getting stabbed and cut in half in Family Guy and that sort of thing. Just really horrendous. A whole song about someone who has AIDS. Like, just really horrendous stuff that's... That you go there for the shock.
Yeah, and for me, like, the Matt Groening humor seems to fit more into the category of it's funnier to talk about it with your friends than it is to watch it. Okay. And I don't know if that's true, but, like, you know how there's some comedies that you watch and you're like, oh, that's kind of funny, but then you talk about it with your friends and you're laughing about it more than when you actually saw it?
Which is The Office, weirdly enough, but The Office is great in its own as well.
Yeah, but like, even that's kind of that kind of feels like the humor that is a little bit Matt Groening, because, like, yeah, you point out the little jokes that are in there and you laugh about those when you're talking about it with your friends or whatever.
Yeah,
and
I feel like
I've tried every Matt Groening show. The ones I've tried the least is probably Simpsons, but I watched quite a bit of Disenchantment and still didn't get through it all.
Yeah,
which apparently that was the worst one, but whatever. Anyway,
I mean, it's I think for me, it's as I got older. I appreciate it. I still can't binge it, but as I got older, I think his humor, especially with I'm gonna be showing how little I know the show, but the bartender, I think his name is Mo, like, especially his kind of humor, which is very, like, dry and not
this
subtle.
In Disenchantment or
in, no this is in Simpsons.
Okay.
And I the few episodes I've watched, it's like that bartender, for example, like, his humor is so... Homer is so over the top. His humor is so, like, just... Not necessarily subtle, but just very dry. Just, like one scene,
yeah,
where he turns to the noose and he goes, "Not today, old friend." And I'm like... And I'm just... Like, he just, like, shuts the door. And I kind of laughed at that. It's just very, like...
Yeah. Simpsons seems to have quite a few recurring character jokes that seem quite funny.
Yeah. Like when Frasier and Niles show up in the show at one point, so that was fun.
Do they?
Yeah.
And again, I haven't seen Frasier, but I have. So this is kind of my problems with a lot of sitcoms, but it doesn't really necessarily apply to the animated ones that I know of. Again, it could apply to The Simpsons or probably not The Simpsons, but maybe Futurama, but I haven't seen those as much. But these are probably my problems with live-action sitcoms, and the reason that... the best sitcoms are the ones made by the guy who made The Office. I forget his name, but he's the guy that played Moe's in The Office.
Yeah.
He made The Office, Parks and Recreation, and Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
And The Good Place.
My three favorite sitcoms.
Yeah, Good Place.
I watched a bit. I watched most of season one of The Good Place, and I haven't gotten through the rest of it.
It's good.
People say it's good, though.
It's on Netflix. It's really, really good.
Okay, yeah. I've tried, like I said, I've got through at least the first half of the first season, and I wasn't
feeling it. It's good. It's not a sitcom. It's got a story. I mean, it is a sitcom to an extent, but it has a story, and it doesn't overstay its welcome. I think there's, like, 40 episodes total, and then it's done, and you actually, there's a bit of depth to it that you don't normally see. It's still, you know, sometimes it's still
I've heard
random humor, but it also has a bit of moralist philosophy, which I think is always interesting to hear about.
Yeah, I have heard of the essentially the pitch, I'm sure, like the twist essentially. I really liked that a lot. Like, that actually made me want to go watch the show more than just watching the show for itself. I'll probably check that one out. But the main three I want to talk about is my favorite, which is Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and then Parks and Recreation and The Office. Because those don't follow the rules of a lot of other sitcoms that really freaking bother me.
Mm-hmm.
So the big one is that they tease the love interest. For instance, Friends, it's going to be Ross and Rachel. And they tease it, and then they get together, and then they break up. Stop doing that. It's not interesting. You can tease a relationship for max, you're really pushing it, but max three seasons. Oh, the other show that is really egregious in this is New Girl. I watched all of New Girl.
Yeah.
I really enjoy New Girl. However, the show is based around Nick and Jess getting together. They get together. It's great. And then they split up, and it's worse again. The only redeeming factor in that show is that Schmidt and CeCe are together for the second half of its runtime.
Yeah, and it's kind of like that actually happens in a lot of sitcoms, like Chandler and Monica.
Like Chandler and Monica. Yeah.
And then, and How I Met Your Mother. It was Barney and Robin. Although they kind of ruined
in In Big Bang Theory, I'm through season 3 or 4, I think. In Big Bang Theory, it's Howard and Bernadette, who aren't the main people.
How do you watch that show, man? I've
it's
seen
fine.
Some of
it's
it.
Not great.
It's I've tried. We watched through me and my wife. We watched through a couple sitcoms, and I realized that, like, I'm gonna die one day, and I'm really sick to death of wasting my time with the same show.
Well, so the lesser sitcoms, this is a bold claim, but I would put Big Bang Theory up there, are the ones that we put on in the background while we're playing something.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be focused on playing a game or watching something else or whatever, and then we'll have Big Bang Theory on in the background. Or it's like that thing that we throw on while we eat real quick or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's not something we actively watch. Whereas I will actively watch, you know, a Parks and Rec or a Brooklyn Nine-Nine or something like that.
Sure.
But anyway, so they have that thing where the main couple, like, they tease them. You can get away with that for max 3 seasons. You're pushing it. You're really pushing it. And The Office really pushes it. But you can get away for that for maybe 3 seasons. After that, they get together. And that's usually the mark where they get together anyway in most sitcoms.
Mm-hmm.
Big Bang, they get together at the end of like season 1, which is good, but then they break up and get back together so many times, it's infuriating. But like New Girl, they get together around season 3, I think, or like maybe sometime in season 2.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great because you can still get comedy out of them being together, okay? And it's you have the payoff and then you watch them together and you want the rest of that. But instead, they're always like, nope, we're going to break them up. And then it's immediately less interesting. One reason is because they have to be broken up over something so trivial that they can eventually get back together in the finale. That is infuriating because any normal couple would just have a conversation and work through it. And I say, I know that sitcoms are not reality and normal. However, that is what happens in the good sitcoms like Parks and Rec and Brooklyn Nine-Nine and The Office.
Mm-hmm.
Because the main couple will have a disagreement and it'll be, you know, a whole episode arc or whatever, but they will work through it instead of breaking up.
Or in the case of Parks and Rec, they'll break up for a couple episodes, but it's such an understandable reason why they'd break up. Like, it makes a lot of...
Who are you talking
about?
It's
selfish, but what?
Who are you...
Leslie and...
when did Leslie and Ben break up?
Fourth season, I think, when she's running for city council.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's like that's like actually a reason because
right.
they actually can't date, and that's not that they had a disagreement. It's that Ben's like, your job is really important to you, so I'm gonna step away.
Right.
Essentially,
it's still ultimately selfish on Leslie's part. Which I think that's...
But she realizes that, yeah.
Kind of. She still doesn't... That's one of the things, I love that show. When you watch... I've watched it a few times now, and I'm beginning to realize that Leslie Knope, as, like, selfless as she appears, if you really pay attention, she's kind of a really selfish character. And it's very
but
much...
But they point that out often.
They do, but she doesn't ever get... She rarely ever gets... Except for, like, one episode where Ben finally just gets fed up. And then that's when they get back together, which is good. That's a good, like, growing moment. But there's a lot of episodes in that show where she'll just be selfish, and then the show doesn't punish her for it.
Well, it's kind of... Yeah, yeah. That's fair.
It's kind of like,
like
Michael, but Michael was just the punching bag. And it was like, Michael did some stupid stuff, but he was always paying for everything he did. He was paying so hard for... Like, his life treated him so badly... Even when he did something awful, you still felt bad for him. Leslie pushes it where she has a good heart, but she also is so, like, just self-focused and so all about herself. And the show just kind of, like, magically makes everything work out for her. And
not but they tend to roll that into a bigger arc where she gets into a false sense of like, okay, things are kind of going my way, sure. And then she'll get thrown down, like with the city council thing.
But that happens, but then they even present that as, oh, it's not her fault at all. And it's like, well, okay, because I understand that there's a political side to this and they're like trying to push. But then the thing that infuriates me about that show is they're trying to push a political message, which I'm like, okay, that's fine. You know, you have a, and I agree with half of it, not all of it, but half of it.
Kind of, but like they do to their credit, they do put like characters who are opposing politically in there, like Ron.
But if you actually pay attention to it, this is the thing. And this is what people miss, and this is why I'm on this little tangent, is that if you pay attention, they do put Ron in opposition to her. But Ron is not...
He's not the protagonist.
No, but not only that. Often when they come to butt heads, what happens is sometimes he'll have a lesson for her about being a better person, which really doesn't come from his political stance. It comes from him as a person. And when they politically crack heads against each other, she will point out all the logistic and legitimate reasons why his side has a problem. And he'll point out why her side has a problem, and the problems on her side will just magically disappear. And then it'll be like, she was right all along. And this happens with the mini golf.
I'm not saying you're wrong, by the way.
I'm explaining. This happens with the mini golf episode, where Ron is going, I don't believe that we should be publicly funding something that's making entertainment for the public. It's like, this is not something that we should be, there's a lot of better things we can be using money for. And a mini golf, something that costs a ton of money, isn't making the money back. It's like, that shouldn't be the government's job. It's like, and if you're in the middle like I am, that's a financially reasonable thing to say, especially in the case where it's not making money. It's like, you know, you don't want to shut down parks. You don't want people to lose out in parks. But there comes a point where it's like, do you need to fund everything? Do you need to fund, you know, all this stuff? And it's like, the money has
and
to
Leslie's
come.
Leslie's very hardcore on the government should fund everything.
Yeah, and it's like, and if you take that stance, it's fine. I think there's a logistical issue with that. But my problem with the episode is that it turns into Leslie, they're arguing, and Ron is making a good point. Leslie's making a good point on her side. And it's like, oh, well, here's the, and Ron keeps pointing out, like, there's no money. You can't fund it. It should be defunded. And like, he's right. But at the end, Leslie shows up and goes, oh, I found money. It was magical. It's just the fairies dropped it off, and I'm right, and I leave. And then it's like...
Doesn't Ron win?
No, he wins insofar as they shut it down because a government run by adults should be financially responsible, so they should shut something like that down, especially when it's known in that show that there are multiple other recreational spots in town that the government funds. So if one spot isn't doing well, it's financially reasonable to shut it down. But then Leslie shows up at the end. It's like, okay, cool. Everyone did the reasonable thing. Leslie was wrong. And she tried to bribe people to get what she wanted. It didn't work out. And at the very end, she shows up and goes, oh, I found money. It was magical, blah, blah, blah. And she leaves. And it's like, that's not how it works in the real world. If there's a budget that says there's no money, you can't just find it somewhere else. I mean, you can, but that means something else is going to suffer. So I that's just one example of 1,000 in the show where it's like, they will be very, they'll be very down to earth and very detailed about the minutia of the issue up until Leslie needs to win. And when they've written themselves in the corner, they'll just, there's a hand wave and then Leslie wins and she was right all along. But as someone who's sitting there going like, that's not a good motivation to have. That's a selfish motivation to have. That's not a responsible thing to do as a member of the government. When they hand wave, it gets very frustrating because you're watching going like, that's not how, and it creates this impression to everyone that like, that's how government works. Like, that's not how government works. It doesn't, you don't, problems don't just get solved. You still, there's reasons why people like Ron Swanson exist, because there are problems that actually need to be solved, and you can't just hope that it'll go away, you know?
Yeah. So I'm not trying to like, to your point,
I think that was my rumination. I think that's where.
Good job, you did it. Yeah, and I'm not necessarily disagreeing. I don't necessarily think that show is perfect. excuse me. But yeah, so I guess I'll just jump back to my point, because yeah. I really don't disagree with you, and I don't think I have the fodder. I don't think I have the fodder to try to disagree with you.
No, so. I'm so sorry. I jumped in the middle of your rumination.
No,
like,
that's fine.
Here's
no.
mine. Sorry.
That's fair. No. Absolutely, it sounded like something you wanted to say. But so yeah, I think one thing that show does do well though is they relationships feel
real.
Real for the most part. Anne and Leslie becoming friends doesn't feel real, but once they're friends, it's fine. Because they kind of force them to become friends, but then after that, once they are friends, like their relationship and growth from there is really good.
Yeah.
And they have episodes where they disagree, but those are like episodes. Like there's literally the episode, which is the Anne and Leslie fight. Or, like, there's, you know, an episode that's, you know, the Leslie and Ben fight.
Yeah.
There are multiple episodes that are the Leslie and Ron fight.
Yes.
But I heard this theory. I'm not remembering it fully, but basically it was saying that in most sitcoms, like Friends, for instance, it essentially pits the characters against each other, but then they figure it out by the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, and so they kind of operate almost as, like, enemies sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not remembering this fully, but basically the shows that I can't remember his name, but the guy that plays Moe's makes the characters within it act as a family. They operate as a family, and when there's disagreements, that's like a big deal.
Yeah.
But for the most part, this is what it is. In most sitcoms, the conflict comes within the friend group, but in these sitcoms, for the most part, the conflict comes from outside and attacks the family group, and then they have to deal with it. And so when members within the family group have a disagreement, it's a bigger deal and it becomes a whole episode.
Right.
So I think that's kind of part of the reason that I really like it, is that as you would within a friend group, if you're really friends, you will have, you know, arguments every once in a while that are big and you have to deal with them. But overall, the issues that you're trying to figure out are coming from outside. And so you're solving it as like a friend group, you know?
Right.
And I think that works a lot better, especially when you are trying to get your two main characters together eventually. I think it works better when the conflict is coming from outside instead of them fighting, but also we need to get them together at some point.
Right. Yeah, it becomes almost a venomous. You're like, why would these people ever...
Yeah, you clearly don't like each other. Why are you hanging out? This is a big problem with Big Bang Theory, actually, because everybody hates Sheldon, but at the end of the day, they need Sheldon to be there.
Yeah.
You know.
It's like, at least in Seinfeld, they were aware of that, and at the end, they all go to jail for being terrible people. So it's like, at least it's acknowledged. It's like, yeah, if you want to have sitcoms nowadays, taking six terrible, like, rich people and putting them in a room together doesn't work anymore. That's actually one of the reasons I like Frasier, is that while the characters are flawed, there's two pairs of contrasting characters that grow, that work against each other to grow, and pairs within that. And so basically you have the ones, you basically have, a lot of the show is based around ethics. A lot of the show is based around being ethical, and, just because you have the power to do something doesn't mean that you should do something. It's actually, a really good show. And when the characters get knocked down for their flaws, but it's also redemptive in a way. So it's good.
The kind of opposite of that almost sounds like Arrested Development.
Yeah. But that's the kind of show where it's like,
the comedy comes from them being terrible people.
But
to be fair, that's a show that I think I can see why people like it, but I don't like it myself. But like that seems like the all of the comedy is derived from them being terrible people and hating each other. Oops, sorry. But so yeah, so basically one of my problems is like, I think I personally enjoy a sitcom where the people get along for the most part, and so their conflict is coming from outside. Or you can kind of have it both ways in something like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, where you have a character, Jake, who's butting against his new superior in Captain Holt. But because of the way they run the show, and because they are cops and they have to work together to solve outside problems, they end up becoming, you know, good friends to the point where, at, like, you know, now, currently, they're, you know, really close. So I think that, and then on top of that, I just hate it so much when the couple gets together and then you're like, yes, the couple got together, and then they break up and you're like, just stop. Because, like, again, going back to New Girl, the reason they break up is because they don't see eye to eye on what they want the future to be. Talk about it. Because literally the way they fix that is they have a conversation later and then boom, they're together, you know? Like, it's just I think what bugs me is that not only do they break up over unreasonable things, but also when they get back together, the reason they do is because they had that conversation they could have had, you know,
years two earlier, seasons ago. Yeah.
And it's like, if you want to break them up legitimately, have them have a very fundamental disagreement and then, you know, maybe change them as characters so that eventually they can come back together or whatever. I don't know. Yeah, but like, it's just...
It's like sitcoms shouldn't... there comes a point where sitcoms should not be about crazy, awful people and how they interact with the world, but rather taking, like, rational, normal people who might have quirks and putting them in irrational situations.
Yes, exactly. And seeing the, you know, the comedy that comes out of that. Right. And so I think that's why shows... I gotta look this guy up. Do you know his name offhand?
No, but you'll find him.
Yeah, but anyway, like, he... The shows that he creates, they are real people that are put in, you know, often real situations too, but they're able to figure it out and make it quite funny. Mm-hmm. The exception to that rule almost is someone like Michael or Dwight, where you have some more ridiculous characters, but by the end of the show, they end up being quite human. And it's just kind of, yeah. So I guess that's most of my rant on why, like, most sitcoms suck and those ones don't, in my opinion. And it's like, why did we take this long to learn this lesson to get some good sitcoms?
I also think too that there's a reason why Friends did so well, and it's because people hadn't come around to, you know, sitcoms are kind of a new thing, and people hadn't come around to the idea that we're sick of it because we grew up with it. I think if Office is popular, and then if every other show that came out since then had been a docudrama, like, it was like the Parks and Rec style, and then they did another one, and it was like, I mean, I'm sure they have. I'm sure there are ones. In fact, I know for a fact there are.
Michael Schur is his name.
He didn't stick with the docudrama. He switched over to other stuff.
Well, yeah, because, like, there's a really interesting growth from The Office to Brooklyn Nine-Nine, because Parks and Rec is that weird middle ground where it's kind of a docudrama, but they don't do it too much, you know? Mm-hmm. Whereas The Office is, like, literally a docudrama. They talk to the camera, and at the end of the show, you know, the series comes out. In Parks and Rec, they do talk to the camera, and they reference that the crew's there sometimes, but they don't play it to its natural extent like The Office does.
Right.
And then Brooklyn Nine-Nine just gets rid of them talking to the camera completely, and it's just a show, essentially.
Right. Yeah, and by a good place, it's gone altogether. So yeah. So I mean, that's the thing. If you took something successful and you run it into the ground with less successful or even moderately successful versions of it, people get sick of it. That's why the laugh track. I think laugh tracks are on the way out.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine's, like, not Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Sorry, Big Bang Theory's laugh track hurts.
Yeah,
it hurts a lot.
There are some shows that do it better. Like, there was, it's in How I Met Your Mother, and me and Justin even realize it was. Until, like, season 5. We were watching it and we realized, like, oh, there's a laugh track. But it's used so sparingly, and so it feels like the show was meant not to have a laugh track, and then at the last second someone incorporated it, and so they're like, they have the subtlest laugh track. It lasts 2 seconds. It's not very loud, and they back out as soon as possible, you know?
Yeah. And a show like, I don't know, it feels like a show like New Girl could have easily had a laugh track, but the choice not to made it a lot better.
Yeah, you don't need, audiences don't need that, like, oh, you should anymore. Laugh now.
Yeah.
It's like, Okay. We'll figure it out. Okay. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think another thing too is I also quite appreciate sitcoms that take themselves seriously on a level to where you get really human moments, like you know, the ones we've been talking about, or I don't even know if this counts as a sitcom, but to an extent BoJack Horseman, I guess, is sort of a sitcom, but that kind of as well takes itself quite seriously in later. And
BoJack,
so it's
actually
kind of
crosses a line for me where it's like where they take themselves too seriously. And it's like, okay, oh, we're dealing with themes. Look at us. It's a cartoon horse, but he's dealing with depression. Ha ha! It's like, yeah, but I mean that's the conceit of the show. But at the same time, it's like, okay, I get it. Like, yeah, it's like, look, we have a message. We have a message. Look, it's a seal. We have a message about soldiers. Get it? Because Navy SEAL. I was like, yeah, I get it. Okay, yep.
Uh-huh, it's very in your face with it.
Oh,
yeah.
Teen child stars turn out the worst, don't they? Ha ha! It's like, yeah, okay, yep, wow. It's like you're really pushing the boundaries with these themes, huh? It's sad.
Yeah,
to be
but
sad.
I think
can make
so,
you happy in life. Yeah, I know. I'm aware. Thank you.
Yeah, but I think BoJack, especially as the show went on, which you've only seen the first season, I think, right?
Yeah, something like that.
As it went on, most episodes have one of those really in your face points that shows, you know, the creators have an opinion on this thing and we're going to shove it in your face. Mm-hmm. But underneath that, there is a level of the characters that you're interacting with become very, very deep over the course of the show. And by the end of it, a lot of it is more focused on them than it is the message, essentially. So it kind of like swaps places.
Well, I think it was, I understand what you're saying, but I think it's the characters of what are the characters are the characters are the push,
the conduit for the message.
Yeah, pretty much. It was always characters pushing it, but it was just, it's like,
yeah,
do you,
and
do
I think
you buy
reason...
in? Do you care about, you know? And I think that the message of, you know, it's so awful to like the message of nihilism at a point is so defeatist, and it's like people reveling in the fact that they're miserable. And at a point in your life, it's like, okay, what are you going to do about it? And it's like, oh, I'm gonna complain about it. It's like, okay, you can do that, but it doesn't get you anywhere. And I think that that's with like Rick and Morty, that's with a lot of stuff that's pushed nihilism.
The shows that are very defeatist.
You can't push nihilism for very long. It gets old because, not because people can't comprehend it. I think there's a lot of people that can comprehend the how scary the idea of nihilism is, how scary the concepts and the philosophy is. And how real it is, realistically, but there comes a point where it's like, you still have to live. There comes a point where you have to go, I still need to function as a person, and I can become self-destructive, but then I'm falling into that same system as everyone else. So you have to find meaning, whatever that meaning is.
Yeah, and BoJack Horseman addresses that from a perspective of nihilism. And so if that's, you know, if that, you know, but like the whole push of the show is BoJack's trying to find, you know, a purpose or a meaning or whatever. And, you know, by the end of it, it's, you know, I'm not going to spoil anything, but like he's that's his whole struggle through the show. But through the journey, it kind of, I don't know, for me at least, like it really,
I'm sure it's
put words for like, it put words for depression and like, I don't know, it was able to like, it for me, it was really able to define a lot of things that I had like felt, but I wasn't able to like, not conceptualize, but just put words to, essentially.
Sure.
And I
respect that. At the same time, it's if you've heard,
it's a depressing show.
It's not necessarily depressing. It's that if you've heard it before, and it's if it gave you the words you needed, then great, fantastic. But for anyone,
like, I was saying that and tripping over my words, like, yeah, clearly it wasn't.
But for anyone who's already gone through those motions, anyone who, you know, if you ever want to,
then yeah, then at that point it's just repetitive.
Yeah,
it's looking back and it's like, okay, I need to move forward.
Yeah, if you ever want to get an idea for this, I would say read Nietzsche's work, but it's so incoherent and Nigh Madness.
Read an essay on Nietzsche's work.
Yeah, read an article on the work of Nietzsche, and it'll be more. Because he's, he wouldn't say everything he was thinking, and he just, I honestly think, like, because I'm not disregarding nihilism. I actually think that nihilism functionally is probably more correct than most philosophy, because if you look at things, when you step out of things, it's like, yeah, what's the point? But I'm also not in the camp of nihilism gives you an excuse to just wallow.
Yeah, and I don't think,
but you'll end up like a lot of people do, which is alcoholic or addicted to something or just trying to find meaning in something that'll never give you meaning. So you gotta actually, you gotta do more than just either give up and fall to the same system or, you know, so.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Bojack understands that. And so it's not, the wallow, you know, essentially the show isn't like, you know, it's okay to just wallow. It doesn't condone Bojack's actions, essentially. It says, you know, you need to, he understands that he needs to fix himself and to do more, but it's kind of I guess the crux of the show is trying to figure out what that is, and I don't necessarily know if it gives you an answer. Right. So I think you're absolutely right. And I'm really glad this conversation about sitcoms ended with nihilism.
I mean, how else is it going to end? That's the thing.
So in conclusion for this rambly rumination, stop breaking up your main couple. They get together. There is other comedy that can be derived than them awkwardly trying to get together and it not working. Okay? Get smarter, sitcom writers.
Nihilism isn't clever anymore. Stop using it as a crutch. Cheers.
Yeah. All right, wait, do I have to sign off the show still? I don't remember.
Last time you put sedative in my bag, and that's how we ended the show.
Okay, yeah. So, well, guys, if you want to reach us, I think we actually have stuff now. So, jabberwockingpod, I think, at gmail.com, something like that. It'll be in the description, and then we're going to figure out the Twitter situation because I have too many Twitters, so we might condense them into one. But we'll figure that out.
Hey, Dante, what's that noise?
I don't know.
Oh, no, the box is opening.
No.
Whoa!
That's it. We're done.
La 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 la, this is the end. Nice.